from KQED.
From KQED, Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, we meet the leader of a project team developing a surgically implantable bioartificial kidney, which may turn out to revolutionize the medical treatment of some 400,000 people in the United States and 2 million worldwide who are dependent on dialysis. Then at 10:30, storyteller Andrew Monacos joins us to talk about her new volume of short fictional gems, In the Time of the Girls. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's Forum program. A national research project is underway made up of physicians, biologists, and engineers to develop a surgically implantable bioartificial kidney. The head of the project team is our guest this hour, UC San Francisco professor Dr. Shuvo Roy, who is in the Department of Bioengineering and Therapeutic Sciences at UC San Francisco. Nearly 400,000 people in the United States and as many as 2 million worldwide depend upon dialysis machines to filter toxins from their blood that are due to chronic kidney failure. There are approximately 350,000 people whose kidneys have failed as a result of dialysis, which probably costs more here in the United States than anywhere else on Earth. And I can tell you, as someone who participates every year in this year in two of the National Kidney Foundation luncheons, one here in San Francisco and one in Portland, that this new research and this new project is quite exciting to people in the field and to people, the extraordinary number of people who suffer from one form of kidney disease or another, because we're talking about a prototype that uses kidney cells, and we're also talking about a prototype that's no larger than a soup can. And we welcome Shuvo Roy into the studio here to talk about this. Really is exciting stuff. How did you come to be head of this project?
Well, thank you, Michael. We've been here on this project for the last 10 years, and it started out when I talked with colleagues in nephrology who were describing to me the challenges of dialysis and dialysis technology. And with my background in silicon nanotechnology and microfabrication, it quickly became apparent that we could bring some tools from the silicon technology to improve dialysis. And one thing led to more discussions and more improvements, and then we struck on the idea that, geez, it would be possible to take the state of the art in silicon nanofabrication, combine that with the state of the art in cell therapy, and develop a device that would provide more benefits than dialysis. So for these patients with kidney failure, it would provide the benefits of filtration that dialysis provides and combine that with additional benefits of cell therapy so as to provide most of the functioning that a native healthy kidney could provide to these patients with kidney failure.
That's extraordinary. And this is really a silicon membrane that makes everything work.
Absolutely. So silicon, as you know, is the material used to make electronics in our MP3 players, in our iPods, iPads. It's a material that has been refined over the past few decades to be almost as perfect a material as man can make. We are taking all that infrastructure that has been developed to make precision patterns, precision production techniques, and create a super efficient filtration membrane that outperforms the polymer membranes that exist. And because of that, we can create a compact device that's smaller than a soup can, as you said.
Which is amazing just because a dialysis machine is like a small refrigerator in size. I mean, just to think of this in terms of scale.
Absolutely. A dialysis machine requires pumps. It requires all kinds of knobs. And a lot of it is because the polymer membranes that are used in dialyzers, those cartridges, are thick. They have the pores in them are not of a perfect size. So they have actually a variety of pore sizes. And you require a robust polymer substrate, so it has to be thick, which basically means you require a lot of driving pressure. In contrast, the silicon membranes are thin, have very high what we call selectivity, and you can really use a lot less surface area in a lot thinner membranes and therefore use very low driving pressures on the order of blood pressure driving pressures to get to the filtration.
And the filtration actually, I mean, just specifically so people can get the picture of what we're talking about, it filters out these toxics from the bloodstream, but also uses the kidney cells, as I said in my introduction, to perform, well, other vital functions. For example, you're talking about regulating the blood pressure or even making vitamin D.
So our device tries to mimic what our kidneys do. And this is what happens in our kidneys. We've got blood that goes through a filter, creates the filtrate. This filtrate then goes down into the tubule, and cells in the tubule basically process the filtrate, and much of the water, salts, and sugars are reabsorbed, and what's excess goes into waste, into the bladder. So with our device, we've got a two-stage system. The first stage is the filter. So it's a silicon membrane that, based on size and charge, take out the toxins, excess water, salts. This filtrate then goes into a second cartridge that's lined with cells. On the other side of the cells is, again, the blood. But on the side of the filtrate, the cells react to the filtrate and the body's parameters and reabsorb what is needed. And what is not needed then goes out to waste.
Talking to Dr. Shuvo Roy, who is Associate Professor at UCSF and leader, project leader of the Artificial Kidney Project, which will be unveiled this weekend for the American Society of Nephrologists. Huh?
We'll be presenting some of our latest results in Denver, Colorado, where the nephrologists all across the country convene, and we'll share some of the latest results in some of the implantation studies we've done.
Government funding helped this project a good deal. This is a multidisciplinary project. It's a project that's been collaborative, involving a number of people really all over the globe. But let's talk about how government funding helped, because it did.
So like many early stage projects, we do require government funding. And we've been fortunate. We've gotten money from NIH. We've gotten money from NASA, believe it or not, some from Department of Defense. And that work, that money has allowed us to work and achieve prototype device in a scaled down version, I like to call it. So we've basically used the government funds to demonstrate the fundamental scientific concepts. Basically, it works. The next step, which is a little harder for government funding, is to basically bring the different components together, scale it up so we can do more testing and ultimately implant it into human.
You've done animal testing, of course.
We've done some animal testing.
Some animal testing. So humans are next. And by the way, if you'd like to join us, this is a half-hour segment, some thoughts from listeners or reflections on this. May not even need dialysis, may eliminate the need for dialysis with this. I mean, it's pretty remarkable when you think about it. And there are over 85,000 people in the United States on a waiting list for one of the 17,000 kidneys that are donated each year because of the fact that, frankly, for many, that's the only way to go if dialysis isn't working or if dialysis simply doesn't do the job. Our toll-free number is available to you, and it's 866-733-6786. You're welcome to join us. In fact, we welcome your questions and comments, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Since this is a half-hour segment, it would be advisable for you to call now. If you'd like to talk with Dr. Roy, again, you can do so on our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or you can send us an email to forum@kqed.org or post a question or comment on our website simply by going to kqed.org and clicking on this segment, /forum, and clicking on this segment. And this is really, as far as human testing, probably a few years off, aren't we talking about?
Yeah, we've together with our team, we've actually laid out a pathway to the next steps in development and testing. And we are probably about 5 years away before it becomes a quote-unquote product that would put into a sick patient.
And it could literally eliminate, as I indicated, the need for dialysis.
Yeah. So just to take a step back, you know, we go through, in kidney failure, through a series of stages, stage one through stage five. It's when you get to stage five of chronic kidney failure, which we call end-stage renal disease, is that you need dialysis. Without dialysis, you will not survive. That's about 350,000 people in this country today, and it's growing at about 5% a year, and it costs a lot. But
and excuse me, I just want to also let listeners know there's about a five-year survival rate of patients on dialysis of about 35%.
That is correct. The ideal treatment, which, as you said, is the kidneys. Donor. Unfortunately, we don't have enough donors. So most of these patients on dialysis don't do well. And they don't not only do not do well in terms of health, they have a poor quality of life. Most of them are tethered 3 to 4 hours, three times a week to a machine. They do not work. They cost our country over $25 billion in Medicare. In contrast, a kidney patient who's gotten a transplant has a survival rate of over 80% after 5 years, and after the initial surgery, costs $25,000 a year. So obviously, if we can provide a therapy that can bring the benefits of transplant and not without the challenges of dialysis, it would be a big improvement.
But lest people get inflated expectations here, you don't ever expect this to replace kidney transplants.
I think it would be fair to say that we will provide many of the functions of a kidney transplant, will never provide all the functions of a healthy kidney, because we are going to use some of the cells in a kidney in our device. In your kidney and my kidney, we have over 30 different types of cells. Here we'll have probably one or two different types of cells.
We should mention that dialysis also can be very debilitating. And if you're going to build an artificial kidney, you can create, I presume, some of the things that a kidney does with like metabolic and hormonal function.
So in dialysis, we remove toxins, and that's about it. In the native kidney, we remove toxins. We provide some of the endocrinal functions, hormone control, activation of vitamin D, help regulate blood pressure, provide some immunological protection. And by using our cells in the device, we hope to recapitulate some of those functions as well.
I think this is what we call Brave New World, where I come from. We're going to go to your calls here. And again, if you want to join us, it's 866-733-6786 or by email, forum@kqed.org. And Holly is first up. Hi, Holly.
I'm wondering, if this works as you plan it, will people still require dietary restrictions and dietary supplements?
I think that's a great question. The thought we have is that the initial versions, I think you'll do have to watch your diet, but we are hoping that you won't have the stringent dietary restrictions you have now, for example, such as phosphorus control. You should be able to, have normal protein intake. Obviously, there's testing to be done, but our thought and hope is that you should be able to seriously curtail the restrictions that you have now.
And we thank you for the call. Go to more calls in just a moment. Here's a listener from Milpitas, who has a question about whether or not water will be removed. Excess water removal is the other function of the dialysis machines.
Actually, yes. So in our device, we try to mimic the kidney. So in a dialysis, we remove water by increasing the pressure a little bit and forcing that out. In our case, we actually remove as much water as your system will allow, and then reabsorb in through the cell bioreactor most of it. So we'll achieve both the toxin removal and excess water removal.
And you're talking about presenting what this weekend to the nephrologist?
So we've been working on this project, for a number of years, and this particular conference we have is we're going to present some of these results of the initial implantation studies, initial membrane performance studies to the scientific community of nephrologists in Denver. And being a scientific community, we want the feedback so we can continue asking the important questions and resolving questions that have not been addressed satisfactorily.
But you're working with people, Cleveland Clinic, University of Michigan. I mean, you've got sort of a team here that's been built up all across this country.
I think like most research projects of this magnitude, you need to have a very tight and collegial team. And I've been very fortunate that I'm working with some of the friendliest but also smart people. And we all get along. We've been working on this for, over a decade now, some of us. And I think what makes us motivated is the fact that we feel passionate about the project. We know we can solve this problem. And we feel like we're right at the cusp of a significant breakthrough, which is we've shown the fundamental scientific concepts work. Now we have to bring it together and, quote-unquote, solve the engineering challenge and show that it works in a larger animal.
How many of you are there total?
There are about 40 people on the project.
Yeah. Listener named Ronnie writes, do you know if patients who qualify for the artificial kidney implant will have the kind of medical insurance coverage as those who now receive dialysis?
Obviously, a hard question for me to answer prospectively, but I think the answer should be yes. And the basis for some of my thinking has been that, well, it's going to be cheaper to the patient, and it's going to be cheaper to the insurance company. They won't need immune suppressant drugs. So I think we can make a strong case that will improve health, provide the mobility the patient wants, but also decrease costs.
Yeah, any idea how much cost we would save on this? Any projections?
Yeah, so we've done some preliminary cost calculations. So we anticipate that we should be able to save about $15 billion to Medicare if we're successful.
It's quite significant. Let me go to more of our callers. And from Berkeley, Sherry, you're on. Hi.
Hi. Well, you answered in part just in that last statement my question. One of the real disadvantages of kidney transplants is the immune suppressants that the patient has to take for the rest of their life, and also that the life of the kidney, the transplanted kidney, it's limited. And so I have a son who's 24 that was just diagnosed with kidney failure. It's a very bizarre case. So this is a very interesting prospect. So would the cells that you use in the artificial kidney be taken from the patient's body itself so it will be more integrated into their system? And what would be the life of this artificial kidney?
So the cells for the device, we've got two strategies we're pursuing. One is autologous cells, or the cells from the patient before they've gone into the final stage of kidney failure. The second approach is to actually take donor cells from maybe kidneys that can be transplanted and use them in the cartridge. One of the advantages of our silicon membrane is that it also provides immunoisolation. What basically that means is that the body's system will not recognize our cells as a foreign component and therefore can't kill them. In terms of how long will they survive, in lab studies, we've kept the cells alive in culture for over 6 months. And we anticipate that, if given the right nutrients in the body, they'll survive, hopefully for years. It has to be tested. And the membrane itself is coated with biocompatible thin films that should also give us performance that will last for months, if not years.
And I thank the caller and go right to another caller in Montara. Lynn, hi, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am on dialysis, have been for about 3 years, and I am extremely interested. I understand this is going to be implantable, which is wonderful. How often will you have to go back in and remove it? That's one question. And the second one is, why is it going to take 5 years? Can we please speed this up? I don't have 5 years. I've already been on for three, and I'm kind of going downhill pretty rapidly. So go ahead. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. So let me talk to the question about how often will we have to replace it. I think the membrane, if it does foul up, if it does gunk up, we are hoping that we'll get a few years out of it. But again, the strategy we are thinking about is that you'll have one major surgery, like you would have for transplant, to put what I call the shell of the device. And if the membranes and the cells do get non-functional, the thinking we have is we can go in with a minimally invasive surgical procedure that you can basically replace the cartridge of cells and membranes. So you have one major surgery and then hopefully occasional surgery every few years if the membrane does gunk up. In terms of why it will take 5 years, part of it is resources. We rely obviously on government grants. We're at a stage where we'll be looking for government grants, but also donations. And that does require looking around. But also we have to do some of the fundamental scientific testing that has to be done, I think, before we could put it into a patient. So that's part of the reason we'll take the time. We'll have to do intermediate stages.
It's frustrating to many people who want not to go through the kind of steps that are necessary that are so time-consuming. And I empathize with that caller, but let me go to more of our callers. And Terry is next up. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Quick question for you. My mother-in-law has suffered with nephrotic syndrome for the last 12 years. She lives in Ireland, and they've pretty much thrown up their hands about it. Would this invention be helpful towards that at all?
I think there is a potential for this to be helpful. I can't really speak too much about nephrotic syndrome. I think But, you know, when it does go into the need for replacement kidney, which I guess anytime kidneys go bad, this would provide the replacement functions of a kidney.
And we thank you for the call. We go to another caller in San Jose. Prashant, good morning.
Hi, I think the previous caller has already asked the question, and my question was related to the immunity suppressant tablets that you have to take if you have a kidney replacement. Would this device, when implanted, would also need that?
No, we hope we don't need the immune suppressant drugs. And again, that's because we are protecting the cells from the body by using this silicon membrane. And as you know, and as many people listening may know, one of the challenges with organ transplants is that the drugs we take, such as cyclosporine, tend to be nephrotoxic, so they attack your kidneys. So by avoiding that, we hope that you will also save costs, but also some of the side effects of these drugs.
And I thank you for the call. And you've been at UCSF, what now, about 18 months or so?
Yeah, it's a little longer. So I've come to UCSF from the Cleveland Clinic. I came in January of 2009, and I'm based over in Mission Bay, and I'm very excited about working with a terrific team of colleagues in the Bay Area and obviously the resources of San Francisco and UCSF.
It's funny how interdisciplinary this is, though. I mean, as you indicated earlier, it brings medicine and engineering and biology together in very synergistic ways.
So my primary appointment is in the School of Pharmacy. Okay, and it's a great because I get to hear folks who have a very different perspective than myself, who has been in engineering for most of my life. Then I get to talk to my colleagues who are in medicine, and then we've got my program in bioengineering through Berkeley that I'm a member of. So we bring cell biologists, material scientists, engineers, clinicians all together, and it's really, I think, by focusing on that interface, we come up with some unique solutions. And our team, now that I look back on it, really signifies the multidisciplinarity of the project.
Of course, Cleveland Clinic is pretty, not exactly, as we say, shabby place to be either. I don't say that as any kind of former Clevelander. I just say that because it's also on the cutting edge. It's really quite, what brought you out here?
I think a couple of different features of the Bay Area really attracted me. One was the new program we are creating in the bioengineering at UCSF. This is a department between the School of Pharmacy and the School of Medicine. It's the only kind of department in the world. A focus on translation, which is where I find a lot of excitement for myself. And then with being in the Bay Area, the ecosystem of how would make something that's in the research lab and move it towards products. We've got the whole ecosystem of entrepreneurs, the support services that I can draw from as we try to move this device downstream into a product.
Our guest, Dr. Shuvo Roy, again, he is associate professor at University of California, San Francisco, and also heads up the team, Artificial Kidney Project Leader. Can people go on the web and get a picture of this and more information at this point?
Absolutely. We've got a website called kidney.ucsf.edu. So you'll check out the status of the project there. And also, feel free to send us an email or phone call as you see fit.
And in the interest of what we do every day, which is sort of interdisciplinary as well, we're going to talk to a fiction writer, Andrew Monacos, in the half hour coming up. I hope you'll stay tuned for that. Thank you, Dr. Roy, and ongoing success with this.
Thank you very much.
We're coming up on a break. Andrew Monacos, the author of In the Time of the Girls, we'll meet her right after our break. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.